At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Hi, this is Richard Nelson with the Commonwealth Policy Center. The U.S. Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade, which means that abortion is no longer a protected right under federal law. For nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade said that mothers had a constitutional right to abort their babies. Now, for one who's been dedicated to the right to life movement for 25 years in Kentucky, I'll be very frank, I was not ready for this ruling. Even though I've worked for the abolition of abortion, I have worked to restore the sanctity of life, I really wasn't prepared for it. So, oh, me of little faith. The U.S. Supreme Court, in its majority opinion, said that Roe v. Wade was egregiously wrong from the start, the reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision has had damaging consequences. That's a harsh repudiation of Roe v. Wade by the current U.S. Supreme Court. Joining me on the program today is Adia Wushner, Executive Director for Kentucky Right to Life. Adia, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Richard.
You've dedicated most of your adult life, or much of your adult life, to restoring a sanctity of life ethic in Kentucky and working to preserve the lives of the most vulnerable among us. Did you ever envision a day when you would hear the U.S. Supreme Court repudiate Roe v. Wade?
It's what we've prayed for. It's what boots on the ground and advocates and grassroots. I mean, the movement of pro-life has always been grassroots. It's not a big industry. It's a movement of the hearts of the people. But I still think, and I will tell you, Richard, when that announcement came in, I was with pro-life leaders from all over the country and pastors and priests and ethicists. And at that one moment, there was a moment of silence. We were stunned. And it's on the docket. And then it's overturned. And it hasn't sunk in. You can't. You know what I tell people, and maybe you're feeling a little bit this, maybe some of your viewers, we're overjoyed. We've got so much work to do, and I think we're going to talk about that. But at the same time, it's like when someone dies, and you're going through all the motions. We're doing interviews. We're looking at the laws. We're in court right now dealing with things. We're preparing next steps. We've got a constitutional amendment on the ballot. But there's still that thing every day you wake up and you go, did it really happen? You know, so 49 years cannot be changed in our hearts overnight.
Adia, it's interesting you mention that because I've talked to several other individuals in the Right to Life movement, and the feeling has been the same. It's almost surreal. There's a surprise. There was an expectation that the court was going to somehow falter at the last minute. That's what the rumors were swirling around last week, saying that John Roberts was getting weak-kneed, and he did get weak-kneed, but there was concern that they might not have the 5 votes to overturn Roe v. Wade, but it's been an answer to prayer for those in the Christian community in particular. It has been really the result of efforts like yours, Kentucky Right to Life, efforts like the Pregnancy Care Center movement, which has restored a sanctity of life ethic. Really, a lot of people have been involved, legislators, pro-life legislators that have worked to restore a culture of life through the laws. So Adia, Roe is no longer the law of the land. I want us to drill down to what does this practically mean for Kentucky today?
First of all, it was always taken as the law of the land, but it was an erroneous law, faulted. Yeah. I think Justice Alito and the courts have made that very clear. There was never a right to privacy or abortion in the U.S. Constitution. So for Kentucky, we have multiple laws that our General Assembly has worked so hard to pass, from heartbeat to live dismemberment to House Bill 3, which was an omnibus bill just passed the session, and also to, in 2019, a trigger law. The trigger law rolls Kentucky back to, upon should Roe be overturned, it immediately puts back in place the law that was the law of the land up until the Roe decision. That was the law since 1910, and it states that there is no right to abortion in Kentucky, but it restricts abortion except for the right, the life of the mother. that law immediately went into place. 20 some odd abortions stopped were scheduled, were unscheduled immediately at EMW and Planned Parenthood. They have since, as of yesterday, of course, filed for a TRO or temporary restraining order against the trigger law. And as we speak right now, the Attorney General and their team are in court on a status hearing, participating in a status hearing on this very subject.
I heard some good news on the radio this morning where the ACLU of Kentucky is dropping two lawsuits aimed at pro-life laws. One was the Human Dignity Act. Melinda Prunty sponsored this bill a couple of years ago, and that essentially banned abortions that targeted the unborn based on race, ethnicity, gender, physical disability. They flat out dropped that lawsuit. That's good news, isn't it?
It is very good news, but they've also, in their case that they've got, because really these lawsuits, all of those that are in the Court of Appeals or in the legal process right now in these cases, they have no merit because they were brought up, they were cases in the U.S. court based on that there was a right to privacy under Roe or viability under Roe. That doesn't exist anymore. Roe is gone. It is no more.
So, Adia, I want to clear something up. There are many people who heard the news about the Dobbs ruling, and they believe since Dobbs overturned Roe v. Wade, many people think, well, abortion is illegal in the country. Can you explain more? Tell us what the status of the law is.
It means that, as it always should have been, it returns the decision on abortion where it should be to the people that are duly elected in every state, ours being our House and Senate. And they have done a Almond's job and a masterful job these last few years fighting for the rights of the unborn and for the dignity of the unborn, the sanctity. And let's talk about these are inherent rights endowed by our Creator, recognizing that dignity. So we have laws on the books. Many of them are in the courts right now, but they're in the courts on the federal decision. What they're going to do is we're seeing this movement to challenge the state constitution with the trigger law, with the 6-week heartbeat, that's also on this case that they kind of brought up in court today.
Adia, let's talk about a debate that you were in on Kentucky Educational Television. You and Nancy Tate debated Planned Parenthood rep and then also a state legislator. It was brought up in that debate that they believed that abortion is a protected right under the Kentucky Constitution. I think the words were privacy. They believed that a right to privacy existed under the Kentucky Constitution and the right to bodily autonomy. Respond to that. Do you think that, first of all, is that right in the Kentucky Constitution, those two rights?
No, I do not. Our Constitution does not mention abortion. We're going to talk in a little bit, I hope, about our constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
And it just tells us even more why we want to make it perfectly clear, although we think it is clear in the Constitution, in the Kentucky Constitution. But judicial activism is what happened 49 years ago when the decision in a court of 9 men recognized what they thought was a right to privacy. We've gone down the road of viability. Now we're back in the states. So I do not think that their cause right now is justified under the Kentucky Constitution as the right to privacy or bodily autonomy. They will challenge it, but it depends on the judges that are sitting on the bench this morning.
So Adia, you had just mentioned the Yes for Life Amendment. This is a constitutional amendment that passed the legislature last year. It will be on the Kentucky ballot this November the 8th, and it simply says that abortion is not a protected right under the Kentucky Constitution. It also says that public tax dollars cannot be used for the funding of abortion. Is this still necessary?
Most certainly, because, depending on what the hearing is today, the battle is not going to stop. They're going to keep trying to challenge every way that they can the legitimacy of taking the life of a child and abortion in the state of Kentucky, and they're going to try every way they can to manipulate wording and the Constitution. So this November the 8th, Kentucky voters across the state will be able to come forth and go to the polls and vote yes on Constitutional Amendment number 2, just affirming that our Constitution does not recognize a right or the funding thereof of abortion. Take it off the table completely.
Sure. Full disclosure here, Adia and I are part of the Yes for Life Alliance. It is a coalition of the leading pro-life organizations across Kentucky, and we all worked together in the last legislative session, last year's session, to get the Yes for Life amendment on the ballot. And we had done that, and there was urgency at that time because we did see this day coming, didn't we? When we believed that the trend was in the direction that Roe would be overturned, as much as you and I had a hard time believing it would ever happen because of all the disappointments we've had over the years, but we were anticipating that. And we said as a group when we began meeting almost 2 years ago, I think, a year and a half, 2 years ago, it seemed, we said we need to protect Kentucky from a Roe v. Wade-like ruling at the state level.
It was very fortuitous, Richard, and I have to say that as we came together, but I keep saying for such a time as this, you know, the pro-life movement and has always been the heart of the people, grassroots, and we serve, whether it's our church community, we serve the people across this Commonwealth in this battle, and coming together, we became such a, I don't want to say a force, a united front, publicly united front, bringing all of our supporters together to say yes for life. Well, the goal of that is to make sure that on November the 8th, first of all, that Kentucky voters are informed. And as we came together forming that first alliance, and everyone who goes online to Yes for Life Kentucky or through our organizations, they become part of that broader alliance. So it's not just our organizations, but it's everyone across Kentucky who says Yes for Life and joins us. But making sure that they know that it's on the ballot. We're not a referendum state, as you know, Richard. We don't have ballot initiatives all the time on the Constitution. So it's going to take a little effort and knowledge and knowing where to go. After you vote for your favorite representative or judges and you come down, you're going to have to go to the bottom of the ballot and look at these constitutional amendments. Were you, and those voters that are often used to just pulling that one, that lever and just voting one ticket are going to have to make the extra effort to go to the ballot. So it's going to take a lot of education for voters to know that we can't just do it by pulling that arm and walking out. We're going to have to pay special attention this fall.
So this is Amendment 2 on the ballot. After you choose your candidates, go to the bottom of the ballot and you will have, there's at least two constitutional questions on there. Yes for Life is number 2. And again, I'll reiterate, it simply says that abortion is not a protected right under the Kentucky Constitution, nor shall public tax dollars be used for abortion. So if you're listening right now, if you are pro-life, and if you want to keep state judges from inventing a right to abortion, you need to vote yes on Amendment 2 on November the 8th. Tell the viewers and the listeners how they can be involved with the Yes for Life effort.
You can do one. You can contact any of our organizations. You'll be hearing more in the church, but it's very important. You can go to yesforlifeky.com. You can sign up then to become involved, to get information. We will be announcing very soon. We've just had a meeting, last Monday, a week ago, on trainings and educational opportunities that we're going to do across the Commonwealth. As I tell people, you know, we all are committed to one very special candidate on the ballot. And it is a special campaign, a very costly campaign. So donations are always welcome. We know that in, I was sharing with Richard, they have a similar ballot initiative in Kansas. They'll be voting on it, if I may, on August 3rd. The other side, Planned Parenthood, ACLU, just dropped $3 million to oppose that ballot initiative. We know we're going to be outspent, but we are accepting donations. It's critical at this time that we have the money to run a campaign for our Yes for Life campaign and make sure that that ballot initiative passes.
One of our concerns on the Yes for Life Alliance is that when Planned Parenthood and NARAL and other pro-abortion groups get involved, they're going to message in a way that's very misleading. We've seen it in other states. There will be scare tactics. There will be false statements. We've seen it happen in other states, and we're expecting that to happen here. The reason I say that is because if anybody listening or watching right now would like to get the truth out, if they would like to help promote the truth about Yes for Life and what the constitutional amendment does, they can donate to either one of the any of the groups involved, but specifically they can go to the Yes for Life website. YesForLifeKY.com. Simply go to that website. You can learn more about the effort, about the participating groups, and then also how to donate. There is a donate tab on that website, and we do need your help. We do need your prayers. We do need your financial gifts, and we do need volunteers. There should be a tab there. If there's not now, there will be one soon for volunteers. We're hoping to find volunteers in every single county to help promote the Yes for Life message.
And we'll also have a big booth at the Kentucky State Fair this year. Please, if you want to volunteer to help at our booth or stop by and see us, you can sign up for more information there too. So
very good. Adia, do you have any last words before we close out?
I just really, you know, we didn't think this day would come, but at the same time, we are a people of faith and a people of hope. And it is that hope that leads our faith that we moved forward praying that God would illuminate this path for this day to come. So we still have some more work to do, though, in Kentucky. And but the battleground is right now here at our state. They've returned it to our state. And I want to just thank you, Richard, for the opportunity to share today.
You're welcome. And Adia, thank you for your good work. Keep it up. God bless you. Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that the news media isn't always fair. In fact, there's lots of far-left bias and political gamesmanship. No surprise there. So if you're looking for a perspective that's grounded in the truth of Scripture and our nation's founding principles, then get plugged into CPC's resources. Sign up for our e-newsletter at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Commonwealth Policy Center. And we're on Twitter at CPC4Kentucky. Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. In the second segment, Monica Henderson of Beside You for Life, a pregnancy care center in Louisville, Kentucky, is joining us to talk about what the overturning of Roe v. Wade means for the Commonwealth. Monica, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Monica, you are part of an effort in Louisville to help women who are in crisis pregnancies, might not have a very good support structure, to choose life for their child. Tell us a little bit more, if you would, before we go into the implications of the Dobbs decision, tell us a little bit more about what you do at Beside You for Life.
Beside You for Life's been operating in Louisville for 33 years. We were founded in 1988. And from the beginning, we've provided pregnancy testing. But of course, the ministry has grown in the three decades that we've been here. Our services include pregnancy testing, ultrasounds for early gestational pregnancy, options counseling, STI testing and treatment. And then in 2006, we opened a life skills ministry that operates 5 days a week. So we have engaged with women who find themselves unexpectedly pregnant for a long time. And we estimate that over 10,000 babies have been saved through our ministry. And I know that I speak for a lot of pregnancy centers around the state that kind of have that same mission and goal, which is to present the gospel of Jesus Christ, provide the hope and support of the gospel of Jesus Christ to women and families that are dealing with unplanned pregnancy.
Wow, that's a fantastic ministry. I know many people across the Commonwealth aren't familiar with pregnancy care centers, but you're one of, it's about 50, is it 50 or 49 pregnancy care centers across? And just like yours, many have been in existence for decades, ministering to women in challenging times. How are you supported, by the way? That's one of the questions we often get. Who supports pregnancy care centers?
Generally speaking, our budget is supported by individual donors and churches primarily. We do apply for a few grants, but even a lot of those grants are given by private family foundations or just private foundations that aren't out there making grants to everybody. Typically, and I can't speak for every pregnancy center, but most do not want to take government money. Not that there's a lot of government money in Kentucky that could go to pregnancy centers, but depending on different states, various levels of state funding can be available. But generally speaking, that's not the case in Kentucky.
On Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on the Dobbs case, and in that ruling, they overturned Roe v. Wade. Were you expecting that? What were your expectations, and what were you processing when you heard about that ruling?
Well, I think that even with the leak that happened in May of the leak decision indicating that the vote was to overturn Roe, I think everybody kind of had in the back of their mind, this could change. It could possibly not go as far. I don't think anybody thought the alleged constitutional right to abortion was going to come out unscathed. But I thought that there might be some wiggle room, especially in response to the public outcry. But it's remarkable how close to the original leak the final decision was. And I think I joined many people who thought they'd never see it in our lifetime.
I can say that myself. When I heard the news Friday morning, I was stunned. It's one of those moments I will never forget, where I was and what I was thinking, because I've dedicated almost my entire adult life to restoring a culture of life, largely through the public policy and political realms. But Monica, we've had so many disappointments over the years, so many court rulings that have struck down pro-life laws that our legislature passes or laws that Congress passes. And after so many years of disappointments, you kind of temper yourself, don't you? Like, man, are we in for another one? But when it finally happened and when the court ruled that Roe is dead, what a day. And I'm still getting a grip on that. It is still sinking in with me right now. And what does this mean, though? Since Roe is no longer the law of the land, and by the way, the Dobbs ruling did not ban abortion. It simply upheld Mississippi's law that says abortions cannot take place after 15 weeks. But it also returned the issue back to the states. So that's essentially where it is. What does this mean for Kentucky, though? What does the Dobbs ruling mean for Kentucky?
Well, as I'm sure many of your listeners realize, that Kentucky was one of only a handful of states that had a trigger law go into effect immediately when the Dobbs decision was handed down. Some other states have waiting periods. For example, I think Mississippi, the state that originated the Dobbs challenge, had a 10-day waiting period after. But unlike Mississippi, Kentucky's trigger was immediate. So right now, EMW and Planned Parenthood are not offering abortions. They're not scheduling appointments. I was on a call with one of my colleagues yesterday who reported that they had a patient from EMW who had scheduled an abortion for Saturday morning. And while she was at the pregnancy center, got a text from EMW canceling the appointment. So that was a powerful message to that woman that she should choose life. And she did. Like, she did not go from that pregnancy center to an effort to get one across state lines. So in the immediate aftermath, babies are saved in Kentucky. But as you know, the ACLU and Planned Parenthood filed a restraining order lawsuit yesterday, and I believe there's a hearing on it today at noon.
Do you have any idea of what the court might rule on that? I mean, so the context is this. The U.S. Supreme Court said federal government is going to be not involved with abortion. We're turning it back to the states. In Kentucky, we have a trigger law that says abortion in Kentucky is a felony unless it is to save the mother's life. So we have this challenge by the ACLU and Planned Parenthood. And any idea of how the courts might rule or what direction they might go in the context of the Dobbs decision?
It's really hard to predict. I don't personally know the judge that'll be hearing it at Jefferson Circuit Court or what his leanings are. So it's one single judge at the circuit court level that'll be making the restraining order decision. And then, of course, I'm sure that'll be appealed. So regardless of what his decision is. So eventually it's going to have to wend its way up to the state Supreme Court. It is a constitutional challenge. I think what I skimmed of the complaint, it appears that they're basing it on a privacy claim, since I believe Kentucky's constitution is not explicit. We know that there's an amendment proposed in the fall about not recognizing a right to abortion in our constitution. So whoever the judges are at any level on this challenge, they are going to have to find Roe or Casey-like privacy rights that protect abortion, is my assumption.
I'm going to double back to that in just a minute. You're referring to the Yes for Life amendment that will be on Kentucky's ballot on November the 8th. So at the moment, while we're recording this, at this moment, abortion is outlawed in Kentucky. EMW Women's Clinic is closed. Let's say that the court upholds Kentucky's trigger law, or they don't put a stay and allow the EMW to open up again. What does this mean if abortion is outlawed in Kentucky? What does this mean for pregnancy care centers like yours?
Well, I think that all of us anticipate throughout the state an increased flow of clients coming in. I know, having been on a call with colleagues in Texas, that a rural center that was on that call back, I think in March, they were talking about the 6-week ban in Texas. When it went into effect, her center experienced 100% increase in the month immediately after that law was put into effect. So we are seeing a slight uptick right now in our client flow here in Louisville, and I'm sure that other pregnancy centers around the state are as well. Many of the state centers are, you know, wanting the women that are seeking help to reach out and find out what resources are available and how we can help.
What are some things that people can do to help beside you for life in Louisville?
Well, first of all, let me say on-ramping crisis counselors, peer advocates, is a long process. This is not handing out bulletins at church. This is detailed training over many weeks. So if someone feels compelled to start as a peer advocate in a pregnancy center, rest assured it will be a need that all the pregnancy centers experience around the state, but it's a training on-ramp. Nevertheless, all the centers need help with financial donations, prayer, event volunteers, because we all have fundraising events, letter stuffing campaigns, phone answering help. There's a lot of ways people can volunteer besides becoming peer advocates at the pregnancy centers. So I would just encourage, if somebody has a heart towards this ministry, that they would reach out to their local pregnancy center and get plugged in. We also need material donations like diapers and wipes. But I would like to put a challenge. I know you said 2 minutes. The challenge really falls to the church, because pregnancy centers can only help moms in this brief window of gestation and birth and immediately after. The church is responsible for stepping up to be the husband and the father to these moms and these children for the 18 years that they have to raise these kids, oftentimes alone and oftentimes in poverty.
Okay. How can people get in touch with you to support your ministry or to volunteer in some way?
Our website is besideyou.org, B-S-I-D-E-U, the letter U, not the word, Y-O-U.org. And they can just click around, but to get involved, there's a Get Involved tab. And there's also donate buttons. And I think that's probably true of most pregnancy centers around the state.
Okay. How can people get in touch with you to support your ministry or to volunteer in some way?
Our website is besideyou.org, B-S-I-D-E-U, the letter U, not the word, Y-O-U, .org.